welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, sponsored by HealthMasters.com. We're bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope you guys are having a wonderful afternoon today. Deb and I got some pretty good stories for you. How are you doing today, Deb?
Austin, I'm doing absolutely wonderful. Got a lot of great stories coming up this way today. So we're going to have some fun today and have a little bit of a blast. And I want everybody to know that I will be back on with Doug and Joe on Friday night for the full 3 hours. So we're excited about that. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So we're just going to keep on plugging away here as best we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Trying to do the best we can to wake everybody up. I had a conversation today with a customer, you know, and I was telling him, I said, you know, the hardest part of what we do is when we encounter people that, you know, really just don't want to listen, because you reach a point where you can only put so much energy into what you do, and you only have so much physical energy. And, you know, people that don't want to listen, that don't want to wake up, that don't want to eat right, that don't want to be healthy, that basically want to live just this worldly lifestyle and put their head in the sand and pretend like nothing's going to happen, nothing bad's happening, hydrogenated oil is good for you, and aspartame's amazing for your brain. You know, we really can't waste any more time with them. You can do the best we can to stay our peace, and quite frankly, if they're going to listen, they're going to listen, and if they're not, they're not. And that's about the extent of what you can do. And I encourage you guys, you know, if you have family members, you know, try and wake them up. If they really want to listen, try the best you can to encourage them. But also, too, if you have family that really refuses to listen, that just essentially puts you down and tells you you're crazy every time you bring something up and wants to eat their Twinkies and hot dogs and cupcakes every day and stay 500 pounds, let them be. There's no reason to keep hounding them about it, because they're obviously not going to listen. So that's the best advice I can give you on that. Speaking of bad foods now, oyster recall now. Salmonella contamination is forcing Canadian company to recall oysters. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency recently detected salmonella in oysters distributed by Atlantic Shellfish Products. So far, no illnesses have been reported in connection with the contaminated oysters. The notice points out the food is contaminated with salmonella and may not look or smell spoiled. A number of different items for Atlantic Shellfish Products were recalled. Amazingly enough, Atlantic Shellfish is not the only Canadian fishery to experience this outbreak this year. Five Star Shellfish, a company based on Prince Edward Island, also experienced an outbreak just a few days prior to the bacteria being detected in Atlanta Shellfish oyster. They released a recall on their large standard oysters and their mixed oysters on August 23rd. So the biggest thing I can tell you guys to do, as we've always told you, stay away from shellfish. There's absolutely no reason to put these foods in your body. They're crustaceans. They're cleaning. They're cleaner foods. They're not foods. They're cleaner animals, cleaner crustaceans. That's what lobsters, shrimp, all these guys are. They filter the water. Same thing with clams and oysters. They're one of the biggest filters on the bottom of the ocean floor. Stay away from them, guys. There's absolutely no useful purpose to put that food in your body with all different contaminants, pollutants, mercury, heavy metals, toxic, and now salmonella is in a ton of them coming out of Canada. Just stay away from them. That's why we tell you guys all the time to stay away from shellfish. There's a very, very big reason why, and this is one of them.
You know, Austin, one of my favorite foods back in college was lobster. Tails dipped in butter. And I've had so many of those. We used to have a place in Tallahassee called the Brown Derby, and you could get steak tips and lobster. And I remember we used to go up there, and they'd have these specials. And back then, it was like a big whopping, like $5.99 or something like that. But of course, we're talking 40 years ago. That was a lot of money back then. And what was funny about it is I used to love to eat that stuff, and I used to dip it in real butter. So if you're going to eat lobster, make sure you use real butter and not margarine. But, you know, here's the thing. I got shellfish poisoning. I've told you guys before, back in 81, and it got my attention, and I never touched it after that. And, of course, in 83, when I learned what, you know, eating clean foods and unclean foods were according to the Bible, I completely stopped eating those types of foods. And I'm not saying you're going to go to hell if you eat a shrimp or a lobster or pork. I'm not going to say that, but you may get some parasite from it, and you may feel like you've been to hell and back by the time you get over all that. So, you know, it's just not a healthy food to eat. And lobsters, Austin's absolutely right. A lobster is an arthropod. A cockroach is an arthropod. All a lobster is a giant cockroach. That's all it is. And oysters and clams, they can filter up to 50 gallons of water a day. and all of the poisons and toxins in the water go into the clams, and the clams can deal with a lot of that unless the water gets really, really poisonous, like with glyphosate. They can't handle that very well either. And so the problem is when you eat this is they don't have an excretory system. In other words, they can't use the bathroom. Your body basically absorbs all of the poisons that were in that water that went into that shellfish. That's the problem with all of these shellfish, the fact that they're just loaded with all types of heavy metals, mercury, lead, arsenic, all kinds of stuff, and probably glyphosate now. So avoid those, period. Just don't eat them. And plus, the thing about this is, you know, we have 12 to 15 people a year in the state of Florida die from shellfish poisoning. We don't put that into the brochures promoting the state. We don't also don't talk about the alligators that are biting people and eating people down here because this is not good for tourism. But guys, it's just not a healthy thing to die from paralytic shellfish poisoning, which means you're basically being eaten by basically microscopic parasites. It's a horrible, horrible death. And it's something you've got to just stay away from. And the only way to do that is to avoid the shellfish, especially in certain times of the year when it's really hot. But reality is, I don't eat them at all, period. I haven't had that kind of stuff knowingly in many, many, many years, probably, what, 35 years now, and I just don't have any interest in it. But it's reality, again, like we talked about yesterday, you know, with coffee, you know, it's just one of those things you've got to decide. I mean, obviously Austin's been talking to somebody and trying to convince somebody or whatever, or talking to someone about one of their family members. You know, it's like Jim Rohn, my good friend, motivational speaker Jim Rohn, used to say, you can't whip a U-turn with a Queen Mary. And what that simply means is it takes a long time for some people to learn what to eat and how to eat clean foods. Now, some people never get it. We have a pastor that we used to know over in Lakeland. The guy was a complete and total diet soda junkaholic. I mean, the guy would just suck down, you know, liters of diet soda a day, having terrible problems with depression, terrible problems with eyesight problems, terrible problems with mood swings, just terrible. Didn't make any difference. I literally personally have sent him over 100 articles on aspartame talking about the side effects of the brain tumors, the brain cancer, the seizures, the headaches, the optic nerve degradation. Makes no difference at all. Some people simply don't get it, period. I've got another pastor who's got who's awake, but doesn't believe in immunizations, knows what the government's doing, wide awake. His son immunizes the grandbabies. I mean, unbelievable. And just into this pastor's just horror, this son of his is just shoving all these needles into this little bitty baby all of the time because basically the son's not convicted and his wife's not convicted and they don't believe the pastor is telling them the truth, I guess. And see, here's the thing. You know, if you have a friend of yours who's also your dad, who's also the pastor of the church, and you also work for them, and you trust them supposedly, and you believe what they're saying, if they tell you there's a high probability of increasing the risks of certain types of diseases, including autism, if you immunize, why don't you just believe them? I mean, why do you have to try to say, I'm not going to believe that. I'll do whatever I want to do. See, that's that stubborn, cocky, arrogant, prideful spirit that I know more than anybody else does about this. I'm going to do what I want to do regardless of the consequences because I don't think this will affect me. And that's what it is. It goes back to cockiness and being proudful and basically not wanting to learn, not being, you know, able to, how would you say that? You're not teachable or coachable. See, that's the whole key is, and that's what Austin's talking about today, is that, you know, we try to tell people that, you know, 9/11 was an inside job, that rogue elements of our government were involved in 9/11. We've talked about this repeatedly on the show. Most people don't even know that Building 7 came down. And you show them that Building 7 was never hit. Well, the first thing they hit you was, well, the planes took the two buildings down. I said, well, how did the third building come down? Well, what third building? Well, there's no third building. I said, you know, Building 7, another skyscraper. No, there wasn't. Yes, there was. You take them to the internet and you say, oh, well, that doesn't matter. I'm sure it came down because of collateral damage. And they're not engineers now. They're not engineers. They just say stuff like that. It's kind of like if you start talking to them about albino racehorses out of the southern tip of Tiberia. They're an expert. It doesn't matter what you say about anything. They're an expert. And also, you've met people like that. They're the ones that Zig Ziglar used to say they'd brighten up a room by leaving it. And see, and that's what I've learned not to do. Many of you have called the office. Many of you have sent me emails, and I've answered them. I've sent out thousands of emails since we started doing the show. And what I always tell people is this. I don't know the answer to this question, but I can figure it out for you, or I can try to find it out for you if I don't know the answer. See, there's no point in making stuff up. I had somebody else email me another question today about some problems somebody was having, and I said, it's not my field. Sorry, I'm not familiar with it. It's not what I do. So if I don't know something, I'm just going to tell you. But, guys, I can tell you this as sure as God made little green apples. Those buildings, all three of those buildings, they did not fall down by themselves, and the jets did not bring those buildings down. There was some type of controlled demolition or some type of energy beam weapon or some type of micronuke or some type of nanothermite or some combination of all of the above that took those buildings down. Because I've had enough engineering and calculus in college, and I've done enough structural loads. There's no way that those buildings were that poorly designed in the beginning that one airplane hitting them would bring them down like that. In fact, they were designed to absorb the impact of an aircraft, not to fall like that. The same as the Empire State Building when it was hit, I believe by a B-17 or B-29, I don't remember which plane it was, after the war, and it didn't fall down. It didn't completely collapse. It doesn't do that. Structural steel buildings with concrete don't do that. So if a person is unwilling to believe that they were not told the entire truth about 9/11, they're probably going to be the same people who believe that immunizations are good, or that glyphosate is healthy and you should drink some of it, or whatever. I mean, it's the craziest stuff I've ever seen. I mean, I remember I was watching one of these guys with the glyphosate. He was on a talk show, and I'll never forget one of the guys who was interviewing him. He was saying how safe it was. You could actually drink it. It wasn't going to hurt you. So the guy took a glass of water and put like a squirt of glyphosate in it. And he goes, watch, go ahead and drink this. Just go ahead and drink it. You know, to the guy who was promoting the glyphosate. He goes, what do you mean? Just drink it. You said it won't hurt you. You said it's healthy. You said it won't hurt you at all. Just drink it. See what happens. The guy refused to touch it. He refused to touch it. See, this is what we need to understand, is that the very people that are telling us this stuff is safe, they know, because they've seen the research, that it's not safe. It's the same thing when the cigarette manufacturers a few years back got before Congress and testified under oath, that cigarettes were not addictive and they were good for you. I mean, are you kidding me? Cigarettes are not addictive and they're good for you. And these are PhDs from top universities, Ivy League schools, that are up there swearing under oath. Now, they all should have been put in jail for lying under oath. That's the fact. I'm sure they weren't. But the sad part about it is the same thing with drugs. When drugs come to market, in most cases, the results have been skewed because they were given to organizations and universities and told if they want their grants to continue, they have to find in favor of this drug as far as treatment of certain diseases. And what happens is within 5 years, the warning labels are either changed on this drug because of toxic side effects, or the product's pulled off the market in 50% of the time. 50% of the time, the products either pulled or the warning labels are changed because they find all kinds of side effects they never expected because they weren't tested properly to begin with, nor were they tested with the plethora of other drugs that you're given as an individual when you go to most medical doctors' office. I've seen people come in with over 20 drugs in a paper bag to my office before, dumped them all on my desk, and said, you know, what do you want me to do with these? And I said, I want you to talk to your medical doctor about coming off of these things. I said, this is your choice. It's not my choice. I can't tell you to come off prescription meds. These are, you go to your doctor and put you on all this junk. See, that's the thing that people need to get, is when you test a drug, you don't test it with interaction with 20 other drugs. When you do that, the exponential growth of the variable of the reactions just is off the charts. So you can't believe that these things are tested like that because they're simply not. That's the problem with all of these drugs and all of the testing. And see, our bodies are designed by God to continually renew our DNA and to continually to grow and to develop and to stay alive. And so our bodies can take a toxic onslaught for extended periods of time, in some cases, unless this product is extremely poisonous. But the problem is then, sooner or later, even these toxic products that don't kill you immediately start taking a terrible, terrible toll on your health, like the statin drugs, like the Tylenol, like the aspirin, like the tricyclic antidepressants, like the serotonin reuptake inhibitors we've talked about so many times. I mean, Tylenol is the number one cause of liver transplants in the United States. You go out and get drunk one night, get a good drunk on, and when you wake up in the morning, you still got all the alcohol in your system, take about 4 or 5 extra strength Tylenol, you'll need a liver transplant within a week. I mean, it's that toxic. It's that poisonous. And the sad part about it is that people don't even know that, and Tylenol shouldn't even be on the market, Austin, because of its toxicity levels. But they continue to leave it on there because I guess it's better than other things that they're doing, supposedly. In fact, now we know, and we talked about it yesterday in Canada, they're making heroin legal for people who aren't addicted to it, which I still don't understand that story. Gosh, what's your next story, Oz?
No, that was pretty comical yesterday as far as they're going to allow people to use it for medical purposes as long as they're not an addict to it. But they've tried to come off heroin twice, and they can't come off, but they're not an addict, so they can use it that way. Still haven't figured out that article yet. This was another article that was published by the Finnish website Ink Tank, which explores basically the dietary habits that have happened over the last 40 to 50 years and really marking the obesity and diabetes massive increase that we've seen since the food pyramid in the 1980s. And it also discusses, too, now in the 20th century, our consumption of cereal grains has increased even more due to the political influence of Big Ag. Throughout the post-war period, U.S. industrial cereal farming has gained greater power in political lobbying. They say they funded the scientific research they wanted to see and helped hide the studies that didn't fit their business model. The cereal industry was complicit in promoting the high carbohydrate and high vegetable seed oil food fad through manufacturing and the fear of saturated fats. The familiar food pyramid introduced by the USDA during the Nixon administration featured cereal as its foundation. We were told we should reduce our fat intake and base our diets daily off refined grains. But as we've seen now, since that time, obesity and diabetes rates have skyrocketed in the United States. And despite the fact that conclusions have been thoroughly debunked on the food pyramid, many Americans continue to eat unhealthy amounts of cereal, not to mention massive loads of sugar and other processed garbage that they add to those cereals. It's funny because we were at Sam's the other day buying some organic bananas, and we were running through one of the aisles, and they had all this cereal. And it caught my eye because they're big, they're bright, they're colorful. They make a kid want to rip it off the shelf and stuff it in their car. That's what they do. You know, the Flintstones, the Fruit Loops. The Fruit Loops are the best. You look at them and you're like, man, those are just full of colors. So I pulled a Fruit Loop box off the shelf, just curiosity. Wanted to see what's in it. Have not picked up a box of Fruit Loops since, I don't know, ever. So I was like, let's look at this. And, you know, the first ingredient on it is sugar. Then the next one's like bleached wheat, and then the other one's like high fructose corn syrup solids. And then so I'm like scrolling through all this stuff, and then they try and add their vitamins in the middle of it to make it look like it's really reinforced with a lot of nutrients. And then it's like every single imaginable food coloring you could possibly think of. It's blue 1, orange 39, yellow 3, red 40. I mean, every single possible food coloring you could think of. And I set it back on the shelf and I just looked at it for a second. I went, how sad. This is what the majority of Americans feed themselves and their children every single day, and they think it's okay. And it's really sad because you see this stuff and you start looking at this food pyramid, which is a total scam, which the article's right about that. Dad and I have talked about it before. And instead of doing this, you know, the main thing people need to focus on is their consumption of good organic fruits and vegetables, especially the vegetables like green beans, sweet potatoes, you know, organic meats, organic eggs, and stuff like that. And stay away from all these grains and these corn-based cereals as well, because a lot of these cereals that are gluten-free, you guys got to look at the ingredients. All they are corn-based ones, which they use GMO corn along with all the sugar on top of it. So the cereal fad, guys, is not something I recommend, especially if you got to add your more, or you know, pasteurized, homogenized, toxic milk on top of it. It's just not the way to start off your day. I'm telling you right now, a couple whole eggs and a cup of organic oatmeal every morning will start your morning off great for food. If you don't have time to do that, the Fit Food Protein that we carry is one of the best meal replacements. And also, too, the Living Fuel Superberry Ultimate is another one we have on our website. Those are really quick, easy shakes you can make in the morning if you don't have time to make eggs and oatmeal. But, guys, stay away from the cereal. We've already found out now over the years it is not a healthy thing to put in your body on a regular basis. If you're going to eat it on an occasional basis, get some, you know, the organic cereal that they make that's really clean and use it as more of a treat or a dessert. But starting your morning off every day with this really, really high carbohydrate, high sugar, low protein diet is a really quick way to get fat and diabetic in a hurry. And that's just the truth.
Well, what happens is this. Whenever you have a high carbohydrate diet for breakfast, remember your body is basically in a fasting state.
Yep.
So when you eat breakfast, if you break it down, it's break fast, B-R-E-A-K-F-A-S-T, break fast. So you're breaking your fast in the morning, having breakfast. And what ends up happening is your blood sugar is already low, your cortisol is already up because you're getting an agitation to try to eat something because you're hungry. So your body will take those carbohydrates. It will take them in very, very quickly on straight cereal like that, and it will spike the blood sugar almost immediately. And when it does that, it elevates insulin. Now what happens, all that sugar goes into your system at once from the carbohydrates. Your body goes, whoa, we don't need all of this sugar, so we're going to spike insulin now. So the insulin's a storage hormone, and it takes all those extra calories you just ingested from that gigantic bowl of cereal that you ate, and it converts it back to fat, and it stores it. Now when that happens, remember, your body can't take that fat again and convert it to carbohydrates. It won't do that. It can only burn it for fuel, like when you're working out, or when you start, you know, basically exercising, or if you start reducing the caloric intake of your body will use that for fuel. But the neatest thing about it is if you use protein, it doesn't do that. If you have a couple of good eggs in the morning for breakfast and some oatmeal, if that's what you want to do, or the Living Fuel or the Fit Food, whichever you want to prefer. I use the Living Fuel and the Fit Food in the morning, because it's just easier for me to do that while I'm doing my studying. And what I do, and I'll have my eggs for lunch, and what I do is I basically just stabilize my sugar in the morning by eating a really high protein breakfast. And when you do that, you don't get hungry. If you start eating eggs just in the morning, like 2 or 3 or 4 eggs every single morning with some oatmeal, you'd be amazed at how stable your sugar would be all morning until lunch. And the reason it does that is it's not causing an insulin spike. And the insulin is not good because that's a salt in your system. Insulin is a salt. And that when you get too much insulin in your system, it can over-ionize the blood vessels, causing you to plaque more calcium on the inside of the arteries. It's kind of like an electromagnet is what it is. And so you basically start getting, your arteries start just getting really sticky from a magnetic standpoint, and you start basically, it's like this. If you take a nail, remember when we were kids, and we'd take a nail, and we'd take a cord, and a wire would wrap around the nail, and then we'd put it on a battery, and this would turn into an electromagnet. That's how it would work. It does the same thing. When you have electrolytes in your body, salts, they cause your body to basically conduct more electricity. And so it kind of gives you a different charge on the inside of the arteries when you have a lot of salts going through your body in your blood from the insulin. That causes that calcium to stick to the inside of the arteries, causing a massive increase in atherosclerotic plaquing. Now, that's why the leading cause of blindness in the United States is diabetes, and the leading cause of amputations in the United States is diabetes. It's because of the insulin. And I was at my mom's nursing home, gosh, it's been so many years ago, 15 years ago now, I guess. And there was a guy sitting outside. He was like 32 years old, and he was missing a leg. And the guy's young, and he looked healthy, but he was overweight. And I said, dude, I said, what's going on? He goes, well, I had my leg taken off. I said, what'd you have to have your leg taken off? He goes, man, I got diabetes, and I got gangrene, and I had to have my leg, had to come off. That's why it does that. It causes the plaquing in the arteries. And see, that's why it's so important that you drink distilled water, that you don't take calcium supplements if you're a man, particularly. If you take the good bone calcium that we have, it's okay for a woman, but not for a man. And you basically do not drink mineralized water. You have to drink distilled water. Yesterday, somebody talked to me about the alkaline water. I don't believe that's necessary, because the alkaline water does not take the calcium out of the water and does not take the chemicals out of the water. It just alkalinizes the water. So I don't believe that that's a good source or an alternative source of distilled water drinking or reverse osmosis drinking, and I personally don't drink that. I drink distilled. Distilled, again, takes the water and separates it from the contaminants through steam, and then it converts it to a condensing coil back into a 10-gallon holding tank, which is what I have at home, or a non-BPA plastic container. And what that allows you to do at that point is to drink distilled water and not plug your arteries up with this inorganic rock that you're basically eating. So when you eat that combined with the insulin, it really causes an elevation of heart disease and all times all the other diseases, including diabetic retinopathy. That's another problem with this. That's why the blindness occurs with the diabetes. So, guys, listen to me for a second. Austin's 100% right. Just say no to the cereal in the morning. In fact, we have another friend of ours who's a good friend, dear friend, and his daughter gorged herself on cereal every single morning, and she's the size of a bar now, bless her heart. She's like 300 pounds, and she's in her early 20s. Got a great personality, sweetheart of a girl. The problem is that her mom allowed her to do this, and she got fatter and fatter and fatter and fatter, and now she's like fighting this huge obesity problem now that she's in her mid-20s, and she's got to deal with that the rest of her life, the rest of her life, because once you get all those fat cells like that, they always are screaming for glucose, and they always want to be fed. And so the craziest thing is, it's easy to get it. It's a lot harder to lose it. So here's another interesting article on a gun confiscation. This is Off the Grid News. Lawmakers in 11 states want to give judges now the authority, Austin, yep, to issue a gun violence restraining order, also known as the GVRO, or a risk warrant. The Atlantic reported, a risk warrant gives law enforcement the power to search homes and confiscate guns without notice based on allegations that persons are a threat to others or themselves. What does that even mean? It also bars people in that category from buying firearms or ammunition. What kind of list are you going to be on with this? Yep. The subject of the GVRO would not know it was an issue until the police knocked on the door. California and Connecticut have similar laws, and 11 other states are expected to consider such bills next year. New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, Virginia, Wisconsin, Illinois. So we've got all the Democratic states, and that's something. Now, Missouri, I don't believe it with Missouri. Minnesota, Michigan, and Massachusetts, according to the Atlantic. The rationale behind the California bill was to keep firearms out of the hands of mass murderers such as Elliot Roger, who killed six people in California in 2014. Why don't we look at the drugs and the tricyclic antidepressants that he was on and how they wound him up with all of these drugs and turned him loose? Why don't we look at that first? News reports indicate the family tried to get law enforcement to take Roger's guns prior to the killing spree. Researchers also say that gun confiscation can prevent suicides. Then they'll just hang themselves. What kind of this article's even stupid. Such Second Amendment right groups say they understand the intent behind the laws and believe that the gun owners should have a right to make their case first. It's important for gun owners to have the opportunity to put their own defense before losing their Second Amendment rights, the NRA said in a statement on its website. Austin, I know you're going to say something about this. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was very, very vocal about this when it happened in California. It's pretty egregious. I've personally looked at multiple cases this happened to in California. This has happened numerous times in California already where this law has been applied to people. And essentially, all that has to happen is a family member, a friend, actually they can even say a neighbor now, somebody that could be affected in the direct vicinity, a law enforcement officer, pretty much anybody who thinks you're mentally ill or capable of violence, which means you could call the cops on your neighbor and say, I basically want to get a GVRO on them. I think they've threatened me, or they say they're going to threaten themselves or their family. You don't have to have any proof. You don't have to have a photo. You don't have to have a recording. You don't even have to know what kind of firearm it is. You can say, well, they pointed a gun to me. What type of gun was it? I have no idea. It was just a gun. And what they do is it automatically goes to a judge who grants the GVRO. The biggest aspect of this, though, that is so unconstitutional is that the person that is basically getting the GVRO placed against them doesn't even know what happens. They're not even notified. The judge issues the order without even seeing the person, and the person has no opportunity to even contest it. Once it's applied, law enforcement officers basically have a no-knock search warrant ability to break into the home, confiscate the firearms, and hold them for up to a month unless the judge determines that the order should be made permanent. So, again, you don't even have a right to contest it. They can say, we still feel after a month that you are still unfit to own a firearm, so we're permanently seizing your firearms. It essentially gives law enforcement the power to search homes and businesses without a warrant, because when the judge orders this, they don't actually have to sign a physical search warrant. All they have to do is sign a gun violence restraining order, which is a GVRO. It sidesteps the search warrant of a house. So it completely sidesteps the Constitution under the guise of we're doing this for protection out of the public or out of law enforcement interest because this individual may have a firearm that may hurt himself. This right here was one of the most egregious laws that was ever put in place against firearms and constitutional rights in the state of California. The fact that they're doing this now in 11 other states, they're trying to get this through, just shows you how far the anti-gun group is trying to go. This is why I've told you guys so many times, you have to be vocal about your gun rights. You have to vote, you have to exercise them, and you have to be well-trained, knowledgeable, and know what you're doing and what you're doing with your firearm and where you're doing it. The biggest ammunition we give these guys is when we have yak-yaks that run around with guns that just do stupid stuff unintentionally, and that way they can blame everything on gun owners. If you know what you're doing, if you're proficient with your firearm, if you're safe with your firearm, it gives them very little ammunition to go against us with. But the fact that Dad just said, Missouri, I do not see this happening. Neither in Michigan either, I don't see this happening. New Jersey, Delaware, Virginia, Pennsylvania, forget it. I guarantee you those are going to get passed. Not even a question. They've already done this in Connecticut and California. Notice Montana, Texas, Florida, Georgia, none of those states are even up for discussion in trying to add this in. Granted, will it try and go in the next 10 to 20 years if we still allow our rights to erode? Probably. They will probably try to implement it at some point. At some point in time, this will probably be made federal law if we all just sit back and twiddle our thumbs and pretend like nothing's happening. But I'm glad you brought this up today, Dad, because I've talked about it numerous times, and I saw, too, this article now that these other states are trying to do it. It's pretty embarrassing to me from an American standpoint that we're actually allowing these states to implement these laws and then on top of that enforce them without any type of blowback at all. They've gotten like no blowback in California about this. They just put up with it. Oh, you know, so-and-so's mentally ill, so-and-so's angry, go take his firearms permanently, boom, done. No contest, no question, nothing about it. Can't even prove anything about it. As soon as you go to court, judge says, no, you don't seem fit to own firearms. We're seizing them indefinitely. Go home. That's it. They'll reimburse you for them. I mean, you may have a $20,000 firearm antique collection in your house. Doesn't matter. Seize it all. Give you nothing for it. That's how unconstitutional we've gotten now.
Well, it's kind of like the old vampire stories, you know. When the vampire comes to your house and he sits there and he knocks on the door and you open it up and he goes, you know, may I come in? The answer is no. The answer is no. You just say, no. It's kind of like if somebody brings you a basket full of snakes to the front door and they're all pit vipers and they're all slithering in the bottom of the basket and they ring your front door and they say, we'd like to have you sign for this basket full of snakes and leave this with you, please. The answer is no. You take your snakes and go somewhere else with it. I mean, this is their little thing they do. They tell you what they're going to do. This is part of their white magic, their lesser magic these Luciferians do. It's some kind of cosmic rules they play by, some kind of cosmic chess match we're in with these guys, apparently. So we have a rule board set up. They can only do certain things if we allow them to do it. At least that's what they believe. And so they always want to make sure they tell you in advance what they're planning on doing. And then that way you have to say no. So the answer is no. You may not do that.
Yep.
So if you're stupid enough or unfortunate enough or whatever to live in one of these states that may be passing these rules, God help you. And just don't get your neighbors mad at you and say, hey, you so-and-so is nuts. He's got a gun, you know, whatever. Go take his weapons away. I mean, this is all going against the Second Amendment rights. I mean, this is why Obama's chiseling away with his executive orders. And Hillary already said that the first thing she's going after are the guns. And she's going to basically, you know, quadruple or five times greater amount of immigrants coming in. Now, back to the immigrant thing. We got these people running around with, screaming Allah Akbar, hacking people to death now with knives, wanting to shoot people, setting off bombs in the United States, which is exactly what we told you they were going to do. Doesn't it make sense, rather than going after the legitimate gun owners who are there trying to protect themselves and their family, to maybe stop bringing in the Muslims? Maybe? Just stop it until you can figure out who these guys are and they're not a bunch of nutbags. Just stop it. To me, that makes more sense, Austin. To build a wall, stop all this illegal immigration from South America and from Africa through South America. If we can stop that and stop the Muslims from coming in who want to kill us. And, you know, again, it blows my mind. I did this whole article yesterday on Syria. You guys need to listen to the show yesterday on why we're in Syria. And I've told you repeatedly it's because Qatar wanted to run a gas pipeline through Syria so they could go into the European markets with their natural gas. Syria said no because Russia asked them not to, because Russia's supplying natural gas into Europe. It would cut into their market share. They did it because they want to continue using the petrodollar with the natural gas. That's why they want to lock in Europe again. That's what this all is about, the petrodollar. And the craziest thing is this. So we bombed this entire country into rubble, and then we tell them, oh, by the way, you come live with us now. Sorry we killed you and your families. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you serious? So now they're unbelievably angry. Number one, they're being displaced and their country's been destroyed and their family's been murdered and killed. Now, the very people that have done this to them, we're allowing them to move into our country so they can do things to us. Austin, you know, if you try to make something up like this and you try to use the stupidest logic possible to justify this, There's no bottom to this end. This is so bad. I mean, how do you figure? I mean, Austin, how can they justify that? How can they justify that they're going to bring them over now that they're really, really angry at us because we killed their family and now we're going to let them live here peacefully? That, I mean, are they just? I guess it's just all part of, you know, Cloward Piven. That's all it is. It's just these guys have got the population so dumbed down in the United States now, and Congress so bribed with their pedophilia and their drugs and their whores that they can do pretty much anything they want. I guess. What do you think?
No, absolutely. And remember, I told you guys yesterday when I was mentioning that article about the Muslim from, where was it at? Somalia, that came in and stabbed all those people in that mall. And I talked to you about the immigrants that were mistakenly granted citizenship. This was from the Washington AP. I was accurate about that. The U.S. government, it came out now yesterday, the U.S. government has mistakenly granted citizenship to at least 858 immigrants from countries of concern to U.S. national security, according to an internal home security audit released Monday. The Homeland Security Department's Inspector General found the immigrants used different names or birth dates that apply for citizenship. But, oh my gosh, you would think that's just completely, they can't figure past that. Oh, we put a different name and a different birth date, man. We got DHS right there. We went right through, and that's exactly what they did. They applied for U.S. citizenship and immigration services and the discrepancies weren't caught. Their fingerprints were missing from government databases. So they completely let these guys in. They have absolutely no idea where almost 1,000 of these guys are, which that, to me, in my opinion, that's a very low number. I think this has happened numerous times, and they've done it intentionally. That's just my opinion. But from what this story says and what this audit says from Homeland Security, 858 immigrants with direct ties to countries that have national security concerns. They did not vet them. They have no idea who they are. They don't even know their name or their birth date or their fingerprints. Everything just magically disappeared. And then we wonder, guys, why this stuff happens. Why a devout Muslim runs around a mall with a butcher knife asking people if they're Muslim, and when they're not, he starts trying to stab them to death before an off-duty concealed carry holder shoots him. We wonder why this stuff starts happening, and we look at this, and you know exactly why. And back to the thing I was talking about with the guns, I wanted to address this. Some people may find this to be an odd statement, but I'm going to say it anyways because it needs to be heard, because I'm a huge proponent of this. Do not, I repeat, do not keep all of your firearms in one place. I'm going to say that again. Do not keep all of your firearms in one place. Always diversify where you keep your firearms. I'm not saying don't have a secure location that you keep them, don't have a safe. I think it's a great idea. But do not put all of your eggs in one basket, so to speak. You always need to keep at least a few different firearms in a few different locations that you can get access to if needed. If something gets confiscated, if something gets stolen, if you are not in a position, if there's some type of fire, if there's some type of malfunction, if there's some type of EMP, if you cannot get back to your main firearm cache, you need to have some type of backup in multiple places, whether it's your work, whether it's another business, whether it's family houses, whether it's vehicles. I don't know your situation. You pick it. But never, ever, ever have all of your eggs in one basket all the time. Always have at least a few different firearms spread in different locations. I wanted to address that because that's something that a lot of people don't talk about at all, and it needs to get brought up, especially the way things are going. And when we see what California and all these states are doing now with these gun confiscation bills, you need to make sure you're being smart with this stuff. And also, too, don't be telling everybody about it. Don't be showing everybody all your guns. Don't be flaunting them everywhere. Everybody knows you got a gun here or there. It's not a big deal. But don't be allowing people to see all of your weapons in certain places. That's just side note. You guys can take it or leave it, but I wanted to throw that out there right now because you guys are our family, you're our listeners, and this needs to be said.
And also, wherever you secure that firearm, you make sure your kids can't get to it and that other people can't get to it, because the reality is you don't want somebody opening your trunk because it has an automatic lock on it in your car and some kid getting in there and shooting somebody by accident. That's really, really important. If you've got to get a gun lock for your back of your car or for the cases or whatever, do that. But make sure that what you have stored in a cache is not going to have accessibility to young children or other people who you don't want to have to grab those guns. That's very, very important because you've got to protect the kids. That's super important, and that's something I always tell everybody. You've got to teach kids proper gun safety, and it's not for your kids. It's for the sake of the kids that may be living close to there, because kids are just nosy. I know, you know, sometimes I'll keep my gun in the car, and when I go into the office, I won't bother to bring it in with me. And I always make sure my vehicle's locked because we have kids who walk to school behind our vehicles, and I want to make sure they don't just open the door and say, oh, wow, there's a gun here. How cool is this? What happens when I pull this trigger? Well, yeah, well, my guns are chambered. It's going to fire. So make sure that if some kid who doesn't know how to handle a firearm, or an adult in many cases, picks up that vehicle or picks up that car, opens up that vehicle, that they don't do it. I have a friend of mine, I'm not going to mention any names because it's going to be too embarrassing. He actually had a friend, they went to a party to watch like a football game, and one of the guys at the party talked to the owner of the house, and the owner of a house had a 357 Magnum. And the guy, and Austin knows this story, we're not going to mention any names, and the guy with the 357 Magnum unloaded the gun and basically showed it to everybody. Everybody's playing with it like it's a toy, right? Well, then the owner reloads it. Well, one of the guys thinks it's still a toy, picks it up, and blows out the back sliding glass window in the house with the 357 discharge. I can't even imagine how loud that was inside the house. And, of course, it wasn't funny at that point anymore.
No.
See, you know, guys, these aren't toys, okay? These are serious, serious weapons that can kill people, and you've got to treat them accordingly. I mean, there is no such thing as an unloaded gun. You don't play with it at a party. You don't do that kind of stuff with it. Nobody touches the weapons unless they've been trained in the weapons. And nobody, and like we talked about the other day, don't muzzle sweep. Here's another article. The debate is over. Banking has become a criminal enterprise in the United States. That's a fact. And it's all because it's Rothschild loaned. Tomorrow, the U.S. Senate Banking Committee will hold a hearing to take testimony from Wells Fargo CEO John Stumpf and federal regulators to understand how this mega bank was able to get away with opening more than 2 million fake customer accounts over a span of years. The accounts and or credit cards were never authorized by the customer and were opened solely by the employees to meet sales quotas, get bonuses, or to avoid getting fired for failing to meet sales targets. The only reason the Republican-controlled Senate is holding this hearing is because this lady wrote this. Now, I don't care if it's Republican or Democratic. It doesn't make any difference. They're all a bunch of crooks. Because the Wells Fargo fake accounts were got a lot of coverage in the media when the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau announced a $185 million settlement over the charges on September the 8th. In July of last year, it's when Citibank, the deposit-taking retail bank, settled charges with the CFPB for $700 million for deceptively selling add-on products to credit card customers. The Senate Banking Committee yawned and did nothing. The CFPB charges against Citibank came exactly 2 months after Citibank's parent, Citicorp, pleaded guilty to felony with the Justice Department in connection with the rigging of foreign currency. The public first got a peek into the corrupt culture of the Citigroup, the bank. Remember, this is one of the Federal Reserve banks owned by the Rothschild Group, okay? That's who Citicorp is, along with Goldman Sachs. The bank holding company on Citibank December 4, 2011, when Richard Bowen, a former Citibank vice president and whistleblower, appeared on 60 Minutes. Bowen explained how he had found that Citigroup was buying fraudulent mortgages and selling to investors a sound investment. Bowen explained in 60 Minutes what happens when an honest employee speaks out in the Wall Street banking behemoth. I was relieved of most of my responsibility and I was no longer physically with the organization. He was told not to show up at the bank. Bowen's treatment at Citicorp was replicated against a different whistleblower at J.P. Morgan Chase, now the largest U.S. bank by assets, according to the report by Matt Tabby. This just goes on and on and on and on. The Senate Banking Committee added to this crisis by holding isolated hearings of isolated banks only after the current scandal. I mean, if you watch this article is written by Pam Martins. You can read this. She's a little bit too... she's a little bit too communist, to be honest with you, for you me to promote her website, but that's her name. And she's not really a communist. She's kind of a socialist, kind of communist, but she has a lot of good articles that are neutral that I like to quote on her on these things. She's an excellent writer. But the thing about it is that, guys, you know, and well, by the way, she also does not like Hillary, but she did like Bernie, which I thought that was okay with her too. So here's the thing. The banking fraud that we have brought to us by the Rothschild Group is the ones who are doing all this. Remember, the Rothschild Group is the same group that approved the Bayer-Monsanto merger and pushed it through. Always remember that. They're going to finance it, which means that now they'll own the controlling interest, I'm sure, because of their debt to both those companies, which is nuts. So, Sana, what do you think about this with the banks, Austin? I mean, I'm not a big fan of banks anyhow. It seems like every time you need to borrow money from a bank, they're not wanting to borrow and let you lend and borrow any money. And every time you don't need to borrow money, they call you up and ask if you want to borrow money. It's like they're all kind of twisted up. What do you think, son?
Well, no, it's gotten very twisted now. And now the even mention that we hear about of the negative interest rates even makes banks that less appealing to me. The problem is now, you know, banks were always supposed to be designed as, you know, a industry to essentially what they should have been, what they were designed to originally be, was to help, you know, grow the economy, to basically support loans, help people get money, help people grow businesses, and then they're paid back at minimal interest rates, so they still make a profit on what they do, but it's always reasonable. And what has turned in now is what we've seen is it always escalates with banks every time because the greed corrupts absolutely. And this is what's happened now with the Federal Reserve, with all these banks, is they just continue to go down this level of greed further and further and further in this hole. And it's what you've mentioned before. Greed has no limit. There's never enough. That's the issue with greed. It's never like, well, I've got this now, that was a goal, so now, you know, I'm pretty confident with this, I'm, you know, I'm satisfied with it. It's never like that. And the problem is, with the banking, it almost always ends up being greed. And greed overtakes everything it's around when it's involved. So, yeah, it is sad to see this. It doesn't surprise me at all. But, you know as well as I do, I'm not a huge proponent of banks, especially with the negative interest rates being brought up now. There's too many other things you can put your money in as far as land, ammunition, gold, silver, anything that's going to have a better investment right now than some of this ridiculous stuff. I mean, they sent me something in the mail the other day from SunTrust. They're like, oh, our new savings account offers our 0.025% interest rate for you. And I just kind of looked at it, and I'm like, really? Is this a joke? This is a joke right now. Like, that's what, 0.025% interest, that's the whopping interest that I'm going to get back every year from putting my money in the bank in a savings account with you guys. Like, it's a joke. But then when you go to try and buy a house, they want 2, 3, 4, 5% mortgage rate on it. So it's so skewed now in favor of the banks because everything is just completely steeped in greed that that's where it's gone now. That's what we see. We even see now they're even pushing even further. Harvard professor and economist Ken Rogoff is one of the leading people now in the Wall Street Journal talking about the new article, Sinister Side of Cash. The solution, he declares, is to simply get rid of anything but the smallest banknotes. This, again, goes back to the banks owning and controlling everything. He basically likens anybody that has large bills to drug dealers, human traffickers, and tax cheats. He said by ridding the society of anything larger than a $10 bill, it would completely incapacitate these individuals. And so what's interesting is we see more and more now, he goes to state on here, it seems to blame cash, not people, for facilitating criminal activity. He says there's little debate among law enforcement agencies that paper currency, especially large notes such as $100 bills, facilitate racketeering, extortion, money laundering, drug and human trafficking, the corruption of human officials, not to mention terrorism. And this is what we see now is they're going more and more subtly trying to demonize cash, making it something dirty. You don't want cash. It's dirty. Go use a debit card. We have a chip in it. That way we can monitor everything you do. Use that instead. It's much cleaner than cash. The bankers, if this happens, if we get to a point now where cash is completely rid of, except for, you know, ones, fives, and tens, the banks will have their take on everybody. It will be like shooting fish in a barrel. They can essentially grab their fees and deposits on anything they want, on any transactions, on any savings, on anything, and there's nothing anybody's going to do about it. They're just going to put up with it and take it because that's going to be the new norm. They'll say, well, every time you use your debit card now, there's a 0.5% transaction fee. Just every time you use it, doesn't matter what you use it on, it's always 0.5% transaction fee. And this is what they're going to start doing. The same thing they did with the income tax after 1913. Remember, in 1913, the income tax was 1% across the board, the IRS. 1%. Now we have it all the way up to what? 45%, and then you throw in your Social Security, your Medicare, all your other stuff you get tagged, especially if you're a business owner, you got a match, you're running around 60% as far as what you're paying. So this is what we see now. This is why they're trying so hard to demonize and get rid of cash so the bankers can have even more money and try and fill that greed black hole that they're infilled with that they'll never fill because it's simply from Satan. Greed is nothing but other than from Satan. That's simple as that.
Wes, it's a black hole you can't fill. That's why the Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil.
There you go.
And these guys, and this is why Jesus, if you got to remember, the only act of violence that we ever saw Jesus do when he picked up the tables of the money changers and put a whip together and beat the holy living yak-yak out of him, screaming and yelling, and ran him out of the temple. And, of course, a week later, they crucified him because he was interfering with their commerce. And so that's what it all boils down to when you really look at what happened with Christ. Christ had enough of it. And he also called these Pharisees and these leaders of the law, he called them the sons of Lucifer, basically. And because he knew who they were and he knew their heart, he knew what they were on the inside. That's why he called them out, straight out. And he understood what Babylonian money magic was, and that's why he had enough of it. Because you've turned the house of God into a den of thieves and robbers. That's what he told them. See, and this is what it's all about. This is what all these guys do. If they can just say 0.5%. See, you say, well, let's say they charge you 1.5% on your transaction fees, okay? So you get $100 out of your ATM, and they charge you $1.50. All right, you say, well, that's not that big of a deal. It's 1.5%. $1.50, okay. $1.50 for the transaction. Now, if they did that on an interest-bearing rate, they just charge you 18% annual interest for one transaction, which means it's way beyond 18%, because, you know, 1.5 times 12 is going to be 18% per year. So it's not for an entire year, it's for 1 second. That's why they make so much money on their fees. That's why you've got to really watch the fees. That's why I don't use debit cards. That's why I may go get, you know, $100 or whatever from the bank, and, you know, I'll spend it, you know, and just break the money and then spend, you know, spend it where I want to, a little bit, a little here and there. But I don't do debit cards out of ATMs. Plus, it's dangerous to be doing that stuff in the middle of the night trying to get cash out of a machine. It's just, the whole thing's just nuts. So, guys, listen to me for a second. There are certain things you should do, certain things you shouldn't do. Austin's right. You know, I mean, you know, stuffing money into an account making 1%, you'd be better off to buy gold and silver as far as I'm concerned, because at least at that point, you have the chance of appreciation if they'll stop manipulating the system with that. Here's another article on the, since we're talking about money. Where do Trump and Clinton stand on TV radio ad spends? Let me put it to you this way. Make it real simple. I'm going to abbreviate this article. Okay. Of the 149,912,723,000 booked in TV ads and radio spending through Election Day for these three presidential candidates, Clinton is spending $145 million out of $149 million. Trump's bought $4 million worth of advertising. That's it. That's it. And so she, wow, she is basically outspending him 30 to 1. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Yeah. 33 times the outlay of the team Trump. Because, see, Trump doesn't need name recognition. Everybody knows that. I mean, I remember that's the one thing I got from the little meeting, of the Trump meeting we went to the other night. They said Trump doesn't need signs in the yard. Everybody knows who Trump is. No one, we're not trying to teach everybody his name. You have to live under a rock somewhere if you don't know who Donald Trump is, especially in the United States, especially when the show was on for over 10 years on The Apprentice. I mean, the global media who put him in that position of doing that show for so long, they gave him so much notoriety. Plus, gosh, he's had notoriety since the 70s and the 80s with all his Trump buildings and Trump towers and Trump everything. So, guys, it's interesting. He's only spending, you know, about one thirty-third of what Hillary is. So it's nuts. The whole thing's crazy. What's your next story, Oz?
Well, this is interesting. Now, after the explosion in New York now, Andrew Cuomo, the governor there, has announced yesterday that they will bring in an additional 1,000 New York State police officers and National Guard troops to be deployed now across New York following the explosion. He's saying, "I stepped up security just to err on the side of caution. I want New Yorkers to be confident when they go back to work, and we're doing everything that we need to do." And this, again, guys, is what we've always talked about before. Those who give up freedom for security deserve neither. That's what Benjamin Franklin said. There's a strong point behind that, because what they're doing is they're conditioning the population to believe they need to be our protectors. The state, the county, the government need to protect us. We need them here to protect us. That's what they're trying to instill in everybody's brain, just subconsciously. And they're doing a very good job of it, because a lot of people are putting up with this. We were never designed with this government that we built. The founding fathers never needed protection from anybody. They protected each other through communities, through militias, through groups, through patriotic duty. That's what they did. They defended each other. They had each other back. They did not need the government to come in and say, "It's okay, it's okay. We're going to bring in 1,000 regulators. We're going to bring in 1,000 private contractors, and they're going to give you guys security. You don't have to worry about that. We'll protect you guys." The first thing they would have said is, "You guys can take your contractors and send them back to England." And that's exactly what they did when the Redcoats came over and tried to control them and tried to confiscate their firearms, like they're trying to do here now. So New York doesn't surprise me this is happening. But they do this in large cities. They acclimate the population, and they beta test to see what type of resistance they get. And obviously, New York now, from what I've read, has had zero resistance against this. They're actually begging for more security. They're frothing at the mouth saying, "Please give us more police. Please frisk us more. Please make us walk through metal detectors down the street. Please do anything you can to protect us." And that is the ideology that we have to get rid of in our brains if we ever want to bring America back to the constitutional base that it was founded on. We have to support one another. We have to have each other's back. We have to have family, friends, patriots, Christians together, one another, have to come together and be strong. I mean, we have, what, 330, 320 million people in this country, and we need the government to protect us? Are you kidding me right now? It's a joke. It's a joke. The fact that we even think we need protection is a joke. But that's what's going on now, and that's what's happening. That's why we're doing everything we can with this show, with HealthMasters.com, to bring everybody together, to wake people up, to try and get people healthy, strong, and fit, to be there for one another and stand with the Patriots and say, hey, we're going to take care of one another. We're going to be strong with each other. We're going to be healthy with one another. That's what we're trying to promote. That's what we're trying to do. And we thank all the listeners for that, guys. Everybody that's been supporting us, that's been writing emails, that calls us up, we really do appreciate everything. It means a lot to us, and it shows us that we actually have some people listening, because it's nice sometimes, because Dad and I are here on the show, and it's nice when we get an email every now and then. It's like, hey, you know, we love that on the show, or hey, we heard that on the show, congrats. Because it's actually nice to know somebody's listening, and we don't have, you know, one person up in Alaska listening to us every day.
we get thousands of emails. Thank you, guys. We know somebody's here. Thank you.
And, yes.
But the craziest thing is that this is, you know, with this whole thing, I remember, was it with me and you and John in New York City that time we went up there, Austin, when we saw the stormtroopers marching down the road with all their gear on? Or was that with the other kids? I don't remember.
I think that was with me. I think that was when I was 18, when I was up there. Me and you and John, we were up there.
Yep.
Yeah, they were marching through, basically, like they were like...
Well, right down the street. Yep.
Yeah, just cutting through everything, stopping traffic.
Yep, yep. There was like about 50 of them, and they had their riot shields, full military gear, and they were basically marching in formation, like, you know, like a fast jog. And it's like, and everybody stopped, and people were taking pictures of it because they couldn't believe the military presence in New York City. And this was 10 years ago. You know, this is after 9/11, but this is what they were doing up there at that point, because they wanted everybody to know who was in charge and what they were going to do. Well, you know, here's the thing, guys. Maybe if you stop bringing all the Muslims that want to kill everybody, maybe you stop doing that. Maybe you don't have to worry about having to have that type of police presence walking down the street. And guess what? It didn't help, did it? Now they're blowing up dumpsters up there, which is, to me, again, it could be more obfuscation too, Austin, trying to get everybody's pictures off of Hillary's falling downstairs. But anyhow. Guys, thank you so much for listening to Health Masters. Thank you for at least getting your multiple vitamins for us. Thank you for signing up at healthmasters.com for our free newsletter that goes out 2 or 3 times a week. Thank you for supporting us and getting your nutritional products from us and your distillers from us and all the things that you do. Thank you for making it possible to do this show. We love you guys. We appreciate you too. Austin, go ahead and close.
Absolutely. Yes, like I said, guys, we appreciate everything. We appreciate all the emails you send us in, all the questions you send us in. We try and answer them the best we can. Again, I apologize if some of them I have had to be vague the last couple weeks. Some people have been asking very detailed questions about stuff that we really can't discuss. And also, too, guys, if you send in questions about stuff like, hey, I had knee replacement surgery and my knee's really hurting bad and it's swelling up now and I don't know what to do. Not that I don't want to help you, not that Dad doesn't want to help you, but we really can't answer that question from a legality standpoint. You really need to check with your physician. Granted, there's a lot of supplements we have that are great for inflammation and great for energy, like D-Complex, Turmeric Force. Those are all great daily supplements that are really good for your health. But any type of medical questions, we really can't answer those. But other than that, we appreciate everything, guys. We thank you for your support, your time, your listening, everything. You guys have a blessed night, and we'll be back again tomorrow, as always.